Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
On today's episode, Ben Elwood is back to help me finish our Sofia Coppola series with her film On the Rocks. My name is Justin Hamilton, and I'm now convinced the husband is a cheater here on Big Squid. Welcome to the latest episode of Big Squid, and it is a treat to have you along for our second to last episode in season four. It'll end up being a 67 episode season. What a weird number for a season, but there you have it. So this week we'll see the end of this season, and then just so you know, there'll be a little break as I have a mild rest and get the next season prepped for you, which will bring some new segments. There'll be a new director that Ben and I are going to be doing a deep dive on, you know, the same way that we've done the Sofia Coppola stuff and the Christopher Nolan stuff. Very excited about this director, like really excited about this director. So that will be in the next season. And we'll also have a new podcast that will launch here on this feed. So we'll start it for the first season on Big Squid, and then we will probably spin it off into its own feed. So very much looking forward to that. A lot of work to be done, though, so that's why this season will come to an end, and then we can get on top of things. I also don't want to get ahead of myself with this podcast, but just a couple of things. First up, this was recorded for the first time that Ben and I had caught up in person in a few months, so we are already in a pretty good mood. It's amazing how much fun it is to actually sit in the same place while recording a podcast. Everything else has been recorded via Zoom, and it's been great. All my guests have been fantastic, but sitting in the same room, nothing beats it. Second, this is one of my favorite episodes because Ben takes something that I thought flippantly while watching the movie, and he turns it on its head, making me totally readjust my thoughts on the film while on the fly. So also, when we finished recording and I said goodbye to Ben, I rewatched the movie with this podcast in mind. And you know what? I have some thoughts. I'll share them at the end after you've listened to Ben and I talk about On the Rocks. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I don't want to ruin the podcast, but hang around at the end and I'll tell you some extra thoughts for you. So we have this podcast, and later this week, if I can stop weeping because I've already watched the last episode and it still hits me in the feels, I'll record the final episode in our season of The Leftovers. And oh my god, that ending just gets me every time. It is my favorite TV series, and this go around has cemented its place at the top. That will come out later. It is a big episode, so it might be late Thursday, early Friday. And if you want to keep up to date with when we're coming back, you can either join our Open Big Squid with Justin Hamilton Facebook page, or if you'd like to be a part of a great community of listeners who watch and share their passion for the arts and entertainment, come over and join our private page. You know what? If you're joining the private page, though, answer the question so I know you're not a bot, because I've had a few bots try and they consistently don't answer the questions properly and it's a giveaway. So consider the answering the questions. It only has to be an answer or two for each one. You don't have to think too much about it, but that way I'll just know that you're not a robot. Or if you are a robot, just have some taste in movies and music, okay? I'm not judging. Just have some taste. Have some thoughts. Okay, I can't wait for you to listen to this podcast. Ben and I are, as I said, in a great mood, and this is one of my favorite apps ever. It's messy, it gets derailed early, and it all adds up to a flip-flop you haven't seen the likes of since Kim Beazley was Labour leader party. That's a very specific Australian joke for my overseas friends. Just so you know, I also vote Labour, but, you know, flippity-floppity. All right, it is time to talk about Sofia Coppola's On the Rocks.
Hi, Dad.
Hey, kiddo. Oh, my gosh, do you look beautiful. Cliff, how's your mom's hip?
Good, thanks.
Good. He thinks you're my girlfriend.
Grace.
Been busy?
Yeah. Dean's traveling with clients all the time, and I'm just the buzzkill waiting to schedule things. Just, I'm so stuck.
So Dean's going away a lot, huh? On business trips?
Dad.
Raise your hand if that sounds fishy.
He's not like you. He's a good guy, a great dad.
Sure. It's nature. Males are forced to fight, to dominate, and to impregnate all females.
Maybe he's just not interested in me anymore.
Impossible. For women that are most beautiful between the ages of 35 and 39.
Great. So I have many months left.
Really? You're back in town.
Been busy?
Yeah. Got a lot going on.
Do you? He should be worshiping the ground you walk on. And if he's doing something dishonorable, you need to know.
What if Dean's just busy? I'm in a rut. That's it.
I think we should follow him.
What?
I think you better see him in action.
This is your idea of incognito?
Coming through!
Here's the plaza. This is the place to have an affair. It has the most exits.
Exits on three streets.
Can you just act a little less excited about this? Because this is my life. It might be falling apart.
I don't know why women get plastic surgery.
Because of men like you.
Mm-mm. I prefer the factory original.
Yeah, and every other make and model.
Thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment. Are there two? Oh, scared me.
Coming live, it's the Bubble Brothers. 2021 tour. They're vaccinated and they're ready to go.
I can't tell you how nice it is to actually sit in a room with someone and have a conversation.
Oh,
you're
I know.
Three-dimensional. You're I not know. Flat on a screen.
It's so bizarre, and it was a little bit like way too excited. I felt like I was six again and you're about to catch up with a mate. You know, you're allowed to because you've been at school all week. Oh, Ben's coming over. This will be great. Better make sure that I have a shower, not wear tracksuit pants.
I'm imagining you standing on the balcony just pensively looking at the street waiting for me to appear.
Yeah, it's like, fuck, like, I know he's not meant to be here for 45 minutes, but if I keep staring, maybe he'll turn up earlier.
Yeah.
No, it's very exciting to, yeah, just be able to hang out as well.
Yeah, man. We were talking earlier, just anyone that's not in Australia right now, Australia's in a pretty grim place. And, the psychological blowback this time is full on.
Well, it's interesting because if you compare us to other places, we are not grim in the spread of the COVID disease and the deaths from it and all of that aspect of it. But therefore, it's a different kind of grim because there's almost maybe a collective inability to believe in actually what's happening because there's just not quite enough proof of it in your eyes, let alone just
your extended life, because we're very lucky in that regard, yeah. And therefore you put into place all these things to make sure that people are fine, and it's like, how do I relate this? Like, you, if you tell me to push that person out of the way because they're going to get shot by a gun, I can see the person, I can see the gun.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty quick mover over short distances. I'll take them down. I'll cradle their head so they don't hit it on the ground and get concussion and don't realize how cool I was in that moment. Yeah. But, you know, with this, it's like... It's kind of the luck has worked against us.
Yeah, and I think we're all reckoning with this kind of sense of confusion because we were arrogant enough to think that we'd avoided it almost entirely.
Yeah.
You know, especially living in Sydney, we were looking at the rest of the world for the last year and a half.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, wouldn't it suck to live in New York right now? Whoa, you know, London's crazy. And we had a few restrictions, but in the main, like, it was very much that Australian, like, yeah, whatever, mate, it's all good. And so, you know, and also it just seems like this could have been very easily avoided.
Yeah.
So I think there's a sense of injustice and a sense of kind of petulant frenzy, fury that we're here. Like, what this was supposed to happen to us?
Yeah, you can't disregard. It could have been avoided.
Could have been avoided.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like we saw a massive fucking 10-car pile up on the freeway a kilometre away.
Yeah.
And just drove into it rather than go, let's just get off on the off-ramp.
Yeah, I know all those cars have crashed, but I reckon we'll get through.
Yeah. Yeah, just fucking hit the pedal. Let's go.
Australia felt like they were Magic Johnson beating HIV. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we've done it. Yeah. We've done it.
Yeah.
Everywhere else is fucked.
We just threw money at the problem.
Yeah, it's Sydney 2000 Olympics all over again. We're the best. We're good at cricket.
Now look at us. What a bunch of fools. But anyway, it's fucking great to be here. It's great to be with you.
It's
been very minimal human interaction the last few weeks.
Oh, my God. Yeah. The hard thing is that, you know, I've been working I reckon I'm allowed to say it. I would be up by now. Anyway, I've been working as a talent producer on Question Everything.
Yeah.
And so, which has been really fun. It's kind of like part-time, but it's also, it's a part-time job, but it's constant because you're in pre-production. There's a lot of moving parts. Mm. And so you're having a lot of meetings and you're having a lot of, you know, time with that, which is great.
Yeah.
But then by the time you check in with your family, you've been on Zooms and phone calls and, you know, and they've all been relatively intense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That I can't be fucked ringing anyone to talk shit.
Of course.
I'm too tired.
Yeah. No, totally.
I've got to watch Ted Lasso. Like, I've got to sit here and beam it straight into my eyes. But I'm so impatient. For the last 4 weeks, you know when you realize you're doing something?
Huh.
I've been pausing Rick and Morty, which goes for, 22 minutes at the halfway point because I think, fuck, this is taking ages.
Yeah.
We go and get a snack.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Wait another 11 minutes.
I know what you mean.
Got nowhere to go.
Nothing to do, but time, you know, time is strange at the moment. There's massive time slippage. I was saying to you before, I've had piles of laundry in my room for days. Today's the day I'm going to do it. And suddenly you blink and it's 4 days later. Why is it? What's happening? But conversely, you know, watching a movie feels like this ordeal. I'm like, the blood's pooling in my ass. Like, 2 hours of just sitting here staring.
I told you what I did on the opening night of COVID. Like, it was a big, big grand opening. Not quite as spectacular as the Olympics. Much more subdued, the opening of COVID.
Yeah.
But there was...
A lot of gentle weeping.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just staring, as you said, into the distance going, have we already experienced the best of times?
Yes.
Jesus. Anyway,
I just think we need to reframe what best means.
Yeah.
I think we've definitely reached peak, decadence.
Yeah.
And peak just like, I can get whatever I want, whenever I want it, just get my fingers.
Yeah.
I want a Mars bar. Bring it to me at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I think that's got to kind of back off a bit and we got to, you know, reassess our values as a society.
Did you see Pauline Hanson say she's not going to get the vaccination? And she's like, if COVID kills me, it kills me. And that's the way I go. And you're like, all right. Cool. You know what the problem is that you might fucking burst in the Queensland sun and your spores of COVID will fly out and kill everyone around you.
Like a cordyceps
crazy asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, not to get too fucking grim about what's going on at the moment, but the political divisions that are growing intenser, more intense and white hot, and the kind of rage that's associated with different positions and kind of a lot of almost semi-religious, religious fervor into whatever. The government's corrupt, or the COVID, the vaccine is a microchip, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I fear all of that more than I fear the vaccine. Oh, sorry, the virus now.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean? Just yeah, the kind of the political tension that's well, starting to build.
You know, the problem is there's no vaccination for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If only there was something that you could take that just, whew, everyone just chills out and yes, just says, oh, you know what I should do? Listen for a second.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, for anyone who has been a climate follower for a long time, which makes it sound like, mate, I was into climate when they couldn't even get a koala to put inspire you to put a dollar in its bucket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I was a fan back then.
Mm-hmm.
But the climate news that came through was what's terrifying about it is how people are suddenly terrified about it. And it's like, why have you not been terrified all this time? I have been like, I have had that environment panic.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of it is like a different thing, but the feeling of it reminds me of living in the mid 80s with the threat of nuclear war.
Yep.
Like, I just thought that shit was so on the precipice. And now it's like, but for this, it feels like we went, oh, that's a precipice. Let me think about it.
Yep.
Should I step over it? Oh, I stepped over it. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. What? Anyway, sorry about that.
But it does feel like collectively the majority of people on Earth need to get to a point of abject terror for actual change to start happening.
Right.
I think as long as it's some kind of like boutique issue that's like, oh yeah, you know, the environment really is important. Like I've always said, the individual doesn't stop fucking eating Big Macs until they get colon cancer. You know what right, I mean? Like, so if collectively as a society, probably the whole world had to get set on fire before everyone went, oh shit, maybe you know, we need to fucking do something.
You know what the world is. Like, the world is a teenage kid getting up to the exams for year 12 and just going, I'll be fine. I'll do it last second. And then it's now 3 a.m. and they're cramming for their geography.
100%. Exam. 100%. And so, you know, like, you know, there's a lot. I don't hold on to a lot of hope with the environment stuff, but I did get hopeful the other day when it was, you know, it's probably just empty rhetoric, but when even Boris Johnson was like, whoa, this is very bad. We need to have a conversation about this situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone's pinning their hopes on Edinburgh or whatever it is, the climate summit in November.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant the fringe. Ross Noble's going to ad-lib something that's going to get us back on track. He will be the vaccination.
His jokes will suck all the carbon out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it probably did need to get to a point of everyone freaking out.
Yeah.
Five bell fire alarm for actual change to set in. So who knows? You know, humans can do some amazing stuff.
Absolutely.
Maybe we'll fix it. I don't know.
Maybe. That'd be nice. Anyway, how's that for a preamble to talk about a Sofia Coppola movie?
Spoiler alert, that kind of weirdness could lead into our next director.
Oh, yes.
That we want to talk about. But we could talk about that at the end.
No, that was very good. That was a little breakfast radio forward sell.
Yeah.
Coming up after this chat with the Foo Fighters, we will tell you who our next director will be.
Yes.
But first, a word from our sponsor. Finger knuckle. Anyway, let's just get this out of the way now. How much did you hate this film?
I don't hate it. I think you telling me how poor it was before I saw it put me in a headspace of like, ugh, fuck this movie. I don't want to watch this movie. It's a chore. And look, I never got completely swept up in it. It's a perfectly adequate movie.
Yes.
I will never think about it again. It didn't really move me or, you know, there's a couple of nice moments.
Yes.
I liked the bit with the cops and Bill Murray. That was sweet.
Right.
But all in all, I definitely think it's her, Sofia Coppola's, maybe weakest movie.
Mm.
I think I hated Bling Ring more, but
I really enjoyed Bling Ring.
Yeah, I know. That's where we diverge, my friend.
Yeah.
But this didn't do, it's fine.
So I think That was the last movie I saw before lockdown.
No, yeah.
And so I was like, you know, even at the time, maybe I went into it with the wrong headspace because I was like, what just happened?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing happened. Like, I'm like the first to say, no, something happened. Yeah. But nothing happened.
This could have been the last movie I ever saw at the cinemas.
Like, fucking, I might miss out on Tenet. Have a drink, everyone. But anyway, the... So anyway, but having watched all the movies in chronological order, yes, and then getting to it, I actually enjoyed it a lot more than totally. I did the first time.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that it's just like, I've done some research. There's some other things going on.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's just a really well-made film.
Yeah. And I think it completely fits into her overall aesthetic. I think that thematically it's really resonant with her body of work.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely a Sofia Coppola movie. It just didn't have enough of a something to really make it one of my faves.
Yeah.
Especially after The Beguiled.
Yes.
Which is, you know, that's a great movie.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? So, as I said, I kind of looked at reviews, etc., blah, 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 and get things ready for us. And, you know, this is kind of classed as her movie where she's just being funny. Mm. And it's like, oh, in a weird way, I didn't kind of pick up on that because I don't find it overly funny.
No, I remember someone described it to me as a screwball comedy.
Yes.
Or a throwback to screwball comedies.
Yes.
And I didn't find that at all. I found parts charming.
Yes.
And, like, amusing, but it wasn't, like, some zany madcap adventure.
Yeah.
Or laugh-out-loud comedy, really.
No. All right. So I've got some thoughts on that. So, as I said, second time I've seen it. It's just a couple of things that don't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to tell you or do you want to take a guess?
I will... No, you share because there's things that don't work for me. Or
okay.
I wonder if they're things that don't work but are deliberately not working.
Right. Okay.
Is one of them the relationship between Rashida Jones and her husband? That there's an inauthenticity and coldness between them that...
He's definitely cheating on her.
He's definitely cheating on her.
Right.
Definitely. And I think in that context, the ending is really fucked up and dark.
Wow.
I think it's a really dark ending.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awful.
That is so funny. Because I got to the end and I was just like, yeah, he's definitely cheating on her. And then...
And he buys her off with a fucking watch from Tiffany's. It's awful.
Wow.
That she then fucking takes the watch that her dad gave her off her wrist.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, metaphorically, you know, I turn my back on my father and his philosophies and I just kind of, you know, there is no warmth between them at all. And every aspect of his performance is indicative of a person who has reached the point in the relationship where they feel absolutely zero passion or any kind of love for the person they're with. He's so cold and awkward and weird, and there's no chemistry between them at all. It's clearly a dead relationship, and she forgoes the realization that she's had the whole way through the movie that the relationship is over. She turns her back on that, takes the watch off, and replaces it with the watch that he's just given her. And there's no warmth between them.
So I feel like you've just made all of my work be, you know, not needed. So it's so funny because I had honestly got to the end of the film and made myself laugh.
Yeah.
You know, a big fan of my own work in lockdown. To be honest, I've had to become one because before I could be more critical, but now it's just the two of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to give me some props or otherwise we're both going to go loony. But the fact remained was I got to the end and I was like, he's definitely cheating. And then I laughed.
Yeah. And that was it.
And I didn't even think to go, hang on a sec, how does this apply to the whole film? And then now it might be my favourite.
I only got that because I watched it the first way. I watched it kind of with one eye the first time.
Right.
I was like, whatever. And then it got to the end. I was like, oh, that's actually really awful. And then I kind of watched segments of the movie for a second time with my full focus. And I find the connection, and I use that in heavy quotation because there is none, the connection between Rashida Jones's character and I think Marlon Wayans,
yeah,
is like either he's phoning in a horrific performance.
So, yes.
Or it's like the deadest relationship that's ever been portrayed on screen.
No, so like Jesus, you know, so it's funny because it does completely recontextualize the film for me because, all right, so I didn't think he was doing a very good performance and I didn't think she was doing a very good performance. And I also thought that some of the side characters had more potential, but it wasn't fulfilled. Like, you know, the friend at the school who is, you know, like she's funny and she's a great performer.
Yeah.
But it just kind of felt a little bit like, oh, is that all she is? You know, isn't there a moment where we're going to see something else to her? But if you think of it as a movie about a daughter who idolizes a dad who is completely cold, and even if he shows emotion, you know, does it in his own time, and, you know, and he does care and he does love. She has replicated that relationship with this guy, and he's trying to tell her, hey, he's me. That's why he's so rude to him. And that's also why one of my bugbears in the goddamn film was why were certain moments not followed through. So, as an example, when Bill Murray sees the husband and he's cold to him and he goes up, and I'm like, why is there not a scene where he says, hey, what's going on with your dad? Don't worry about him. And then she calls her dad, hey, can you not be so obvious?
Because they know each other.
Well, you know, he doesn't go up and say anything because he knows that Bill Murray knows.
Yeah.
Of course he's not going to bring it up with his wife because he just wants it to... Fuck.
And the difference between... And the reason that, like... I mean, I could be reading into it too much, but look, that, like, I'm not saying Bill Murray is a good guy. He doesn't portray a good guy.
No.
But he portrays an honest guy. He's completely transparent. He's completely upfront about how he sees the world. And look, I've known plenty of people who I very much disagree with their life philosophy. And in fact, some of their life philosophy I could find, you know, at complete odds with mine. But I definitely still like them or find them charming. If it's someone who just owns their truth and is who they are, you know, there's a certain charisma that can come with that. And I think that's what Bill Murray's portraying. Marlon Wayans is the same guy, but he's cloistered and not being honest and just weaving webs of lies. And I feel like her taking off the dad's watch at the end and putting it in a box and sealing it and putting it under the table is her almost turning her back on, like, you know, the truth and buying into the lie. That's how I read it. Anyway, I don't. Maybe it's too much.
No, like, I'm a great audience for this, and you know, I like to overthink something.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very pointed when she puts the watch.
Yeah.
Like, the watch is a big thing because they're sitting in this. I believe they're sitting in the same restaurant that Bill Murray and her are sitting in when he gives her the watch. And like, there's a whole thing, and then there's a scene before that where they're in that same restaurant. And it's just the most awkward encounter where she wants a piece of cake, but doesn't want to say it. And it's just awful. But there's like, and that seems to be the moment where it's like, oh, this relationship is definitely dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you. I've had moments like that where it's like the relationship is over.
Oh, I have them constantly and I'm single.
I knew my relationship with, like, the great love of my life was over. For years, we never had anything. We never had a moment of pause in rah, rah, rah conversation. Just like rah, 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 rah all the time. All the time. And then we'd been on hiatus for a little while and we tried to make blah, 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 blah. And then we met up one night and we sat there in just like cavernous silence. And at one point she looked at the headphones around my neck that had a red light on it and was like, oh, so you've got noise cancelling headphones. That's, yeah, that must make the music sound heaps better. And it was like, it was like the final nail of like, oh, this is dead. Like, we've got nothing to talk about anymore. And that's what I saw in their relationship. They've just run out of shit and they're not interested. But there's no increase in warmth or affection after they confront their problem.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie, when she finally goes, I'm sorry, I followed you to Mexico. I thought you were cheating on me. He just kind of, that's crazy. And then the next scene you see them, they're just cold as shit as before.
Wow. This is great. Well, you've doubled my pleasure in coming over today. A, I've had a bit of company, and B, you have given me a whole new... Jeez, it makes me want to watch the movie, like...
It could just be a piece of shit movie, and I was just trying to find something interesting about it.
No, but she is interesting. She is an interesting director, yeah. And, you know, and she's fucking smarter than all of us. So maybe this is all... You know, maybe you're the second smartest person in the world behind Sofia Coppola, because you've fucking... unraveled this, because you know, even the stuff that I read where people raved about it, no one sort of seemed to
really
talk about it. Yeah, everyone talked about his performance being really good. Like one of the things that I find hard to overcome with this is that I'm just not really, and fuck, I feel like this is, people are going to be upset about
it. I know
this,
what you're going to say, and I agree with you.
I'm right. So let's not say it in case the aggregators get onto us. No, well, I'm joking. No, I'm just not a big fan.
Of Bill Murray?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, look, he's fine. It's just not... I don't get the cult. I just don't understand the cult of it.
Like, there's some movies that I've loved him in.
Yeah.
But it's just... So I don't necessarily find him charming.
No.
But that makes the movie like a masterclass in performance from him. If we look at it as this is how he's playing it.
I think that's what's going on. And here's another theory I had. Bill Murray is Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, yeah,
and
Rashida
Jones is Sophia.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, Frances was a notorious womanizer.
Yeah.
You know, that really pointed rant where she's going, you know, and you didn't even have the decency to hide it from mum.
Yeah.
I just finished reading this book about 70s cinema, and it's talking about Coppola having, like, Playboy Bunny lovers on the set of Apocalypse Now while his wife's filming the documentary about Apocalypse Now. It's like, dude, come on, bro. Like, I know you think you're some emperor, but honestly.
Wow.
Yeah, so it definitely felt like Sophia was maybe working some shit out about her relationship with her father in this movie.
Right, okay. Well, I kind of figured that, but and then now it feels... Like, it's bizarrely really loving towards her dad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You are, in most cases, awful, but you're my dad, and, you know.
Yeah. Can have a nice whistle together now and then.
Have a nice fucking whistle together. So it ranked 86% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
Jake Wilson in The Age says... In her best film in close to a decade, Sofia Coppola tries at long last to imagine some version of adulthood in the most equivocal possible way. And Anna Smith for the Monocle wrote, "The characters live quite a privileged existence, but one that's quite a pleasure to watch." And finally, Shubhra Gupta said, "For a while, the film teeters on the brink of sitcom territory, but rescues itself by introducing a degree of complexity in the proceedings." Do you have a feeling? Like, I had a completely different question now, but... do you, reading those now or hearing those now, do you think that maybe Shubhra is on the money with it?
What about this being a sitcom?
Yeah, it's got these, it teeters on the brink of sitcom territory, but judging by that quote, he says it introduces a degree of complexity in the proceedings. Is he hinting that
maybe? Yeah, I do think there's a lot, you know, I mean, look, all of her films, there's a shitload more going on than what's just being shown, right?
Right.
Like, everything's, you know, and you know, I didn't like Marie Antoinette until you talked about your take on that, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, shit, that's...
Oh, yeah, no, I'm rapt to be given a new... Because I thought, as I said at the start, I thought it was fine, you know?
Yeah.
But now it's fucking awful, and it's great. Like, Jesus Christ, like, when you give it a fucking darker spin...
I read it as a very dark movie. Well, you know, like, not obviously not in its overall tone, but definitely in its subtext.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of looking down here and rewording everything that I've written. So it's funny. So a criticism was that in, at least in Lost in Translation, he was at odds with himself, you know, like there were just bits and pieces in his eyes, just in little moments, you know, but this character didn't feel sort of, he felt a little bit one note, and it's like, that's because he is.
Yeah.
Like, no, I know that seems really reductive to say, like, oh, I was bamboozled by the fact that he was what he was, but I put it down to... I put it down to Coppola finding him more charming than I do. So I thought, I have to take another step forward to appreciate this. Whereas totally, now, if it is what it is, you go, oh, shit.
Yeah, I think he's just, I do think the performance is charming. But I think it's only charming because it's truthful. So if he's one note, it's like you say, he is one note. So
when did it stop being fun? Like at that moment when she fucking tears into him and he just bats her back.
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's no justification of it, but it is his truth. Like, he's not being disingenuous. I think the Marlon Wayans character is a much worse human being than Bill Murray is.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because when Bill Murray's character is seducing a woman, there's no subtlety to it.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever depicted as an all out sleaze either. Like, it's not that gross kind of lecherous Trumpy stuff. It's the kind of
because you see him do it to the pregnant woman.
Yeah.
He flirts with the pregnant woman.
Yeah. He's just, he's kind of like, he's flirting in that kind of whatever. It's probably very inappropriate now, but that old school kind of the way my grandpa, when he was in his mid 80s, would flirt with a waitress. Like, it's this kind of like, nothing's ever coming of this. It's just two people enjoying each other's company in a divergent way, whatever.
Yeah.
But at least when he's coming towards someone, they know what his agenda is in that moment. Marlon Wayans' character is, who knows what the fuck's going on with that guy.
Right.
Like I say, either his performance sucks, and I don't think it does, because I've seen him in other stuff and he's good.
He's good, yeah.
But he's a shifty motherfucker the whole way through the movie.
Yeah.
And everything about... There's never any...
Even the way he's nice to the kids feels It's like... This is how a nice guy is nice to his children.
It's performance. It's all performative,
He was excited about their Instagram followers.
Yeah.
You're a grown-up.
But that's a lot of the time, the only time he actually does show any kind of genuine guard down is when he's, getting excited about the IT business that he's in.
Yeah.
But whenever it's to do with his wife or his kids or his family or whatever, it's this kind of, it's that wall. And you see that depicted in a lot of movies, the husband that's just checked out.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of going through the motions, glazed.
So why does he fly back early?
I don't know.
He probably still likes his wife.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He probably does want to get back to her.
Yeah, probably. Or, whatever. He had a moment of... Well, maybe he's not cheating on her and it's just a shit performance.
Yeah, I know. But, like, either or is it's a win either way. It's fine.
Well, that's the best thing. The best thing about movies is even if you're not enjoying something halfway through, if you start kind of looking for... Even if it's not actually there... No interpretation's not true, right?
Yeah. So I had this point, but it's... which is completely different now with the way this conversation has gone, which is great. I love this. I wrote, I like that Coppola never feels a need to spell anything out, right? But sometimes things needed a little bit more friction. Yeah. And it was like Rashida Jones bringing up toiletry bag... to her husband, and the husband just going, oh yeah, and just moving on. But now that I'm thinking about it, if that's how a dude who just doesn't want to talk about it because that's a fucking big oops, that is...
Yeah.
And she doesn't bring it up because she doesn't really want to know.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's what glossing over a lot of that stuff is. It's that, I'll deal with this tomorrow. This is too much to take on right now. I mean, she's surprisingly calm throughout the movie considering that she thinks her husband's running around cheating on her.
Yeah.
Like, she never really loses her composure until the very end.
So that's so funny because I was like, I just thought the performance wasn't that great.
Mm.
But then if you think about it, she doesn't even really get annoyed with Jenny Slate at the primary school talking to her. Like, she looks bored, but she doesn't snap. She doesn't really... And so the measured performance is fantastic because even when she gets angry, she's not very good at it.
Well, because she's been used to being putting up with aberrant behavior her whole life.
Yeah.
So she probably has to glaze over when people act like fuckheads because her dad's been a shit since, and that's what comes out in that rant in the end. How hard it is to love you, when we were kids, putting up with all this shit. You would. I mean, you know, and you do see that with kids whose parents are fucking cooked and off the rails.
Yeah.
You know, they don't really get histrionic about it. They just kind of, it's just...
It is what it is.
Internalize it. This is just what it is. Yeah. You know, so I think her reaction to her husband, again, is like probably indicative of walling off her emotions because of her dad.
And she's having trouble working. Yeah. And yeah,
she's blocked in general.
Yeah. So
maybe it is a good movie.
Like, maybe it is. Like, no. It's like, but I thought it was good. I didn't think it was bad. It's not like, could you imagine if this was The Shape of Colour and we're sitting here, then someone says one thing, we go, oh my God, no, it is a masterpiece. It deserved all the Oscars. That moment's never happening. Yeah. But so I'd written here, I feel like this movie could have used an extra 20 minutes, you know, like rarely. It's like, oh, this could have been a bit longer and I would have enjoyed it probably a little bit more. But now I'm like, no, perfect amount of time. Yeah. Don't need any more information.
I think so. Yeah.
Far out. you know, the next question was, what do you think this movie is saying about Sophia and Francis? And we have covered that.
Yeah, I think that's the overt part of the movie. You know, if you know who she is and who her father is, I don't think
you feel like you should if you're going in to see a...
Yeah. I mean, if my mum watched this movie on Netflix or whatever, she wouldn't. But, you know, yeah, I mean, yeah. Knowing that going in, you can't not see
it. Yeah, she feels like a Paul Thomas Anderson or a Tarantino that you... Oh, Sophia Coppola's got a movie coming out. Great.
Oh, yeah.
Better check it out.
Yeah, definitely.
Far out. Yeah, so... this is so funny. I am wrapped. We're pretty good at never... talking about the film before we start recording.
No, we never talk about
it. Sometimes, you know, a sentence or two will come out.
Yeah.
But we said nothing.
Yeah.
And so, because I'd written that first line as a joke, because for some reason I was thinking, one of the last conversations we had, you were just talking about some directors that you just hate and some movies that you hate. Yeah. And they're movies that I really like. Yeah. And I was like, wow, okay. And I felt I'd put one of those movies, like this in... one of those movies areas, and I was like, oh, he's gonna hate this. So I write this first line as a bit of a joke, and then even when you came in, you went, yeah, it was good. And I'm like, all right, but like, why?
I'm glad we can still surprise each other after all this time.
Bubble Brothers, fully vaccinated to it, 2021. Come in and be licked. sponsored by Finger Knuckle. Yeah, so it's just funny how this movie is kind of flipping on me in this very moment.
Oh, I'm glad. That's
cool. It's great. Yeah, like, yeah. I honestly watched it that second time and got to the end and was like, I'll never come back to this.
I'll probably never watch it again.
Oh, I am. I'm going to fucking get right into
it tonight.
Wow. No, because I want to apply all of this to it and just, you know.
Yeah.
Like, even if it doesn't have any of this... Like, just applying it anyway means it's going to be great.
Oh, man, there's some cool film interpretation. I saw an interpretation of Punch Drunk Love that Adam Sandler's basically playing Superman, and it's all color-coordinated throughout the movie.
Right.
And culminating in the final shot of the movie when... I can't remember the actress's name. That plays his partner in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And she's always in red and he's always in blue.
Yeah.
And in the end, the final shot is her draping herself across his back and folding her arms around his neck, Superman's cape.
Oh, right.
You know, maybe Paul Thomas Anderson had that in his head. Maybe not. But when I watched the movie applying that, you know, you start seeing all these resonances all the way through.
So
I mean, that's the great thing about movies, right?
Yeah, definitely. So how do you think... How do you think this works? Is it could be three things. One is it just kind of happens deliberately and not deliberately. An either or. But it's either people are brilliant and it's really deliberate and they are, you know, just bringing this stuff from all these corners of their mind and the people that they're working with and placing it in such ways that, you know, someone picks up on it and they're wrapped, or is there stuff so minimalist that, you know, how we project patterns into things that we look at? It's a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
We look at things and we go, oh, yeah, well, there's nothing going on here. I better make something.
Yeah, totally.
And then there's the there's people who have a hyperactivity with that. Like everyone has it, and a hyperactivity, and that's how you get Kubrick faked the moon landings.
Yeah, of course, but I think the best directors do both, because like where it's open, you know. And look, I think after watching all of Sofia Coppola's movies in a row, there's definitely thematic resonance that goes all the way through. Mm. I mean, this movie is almost a conceptual sequel to Somewhere, you know. Rashida Jones could be the grown-up Elle Fanning. And it's just that relationship from Somewhere advanced 25 years.
Oh, my God. Like, I am definitely going to rewatch this.
But you know what I mean? Yes. Like it's there's things that just keep cropping up. Whether or not that's, I mean, surely it's deliberate on her part because, you know, I assume as a filmmaker you're working through, you know, your head and what you, but all great. You know, all Paul Thomas Anderson's movies are very similar. All of Kubrick's movies are very similar, despite them being very disparate topics. Yeah. You know, but there's this. But I think when it's not hammering you in the face, you're like, look what we're doing now.
Yeah,
she loves her. You know, like, it leaves it open ended enough for that reflection or projection to happen.
Yeah.
You know? Have you seen that movie, the doco Room 237 about The Shining?
No, I've never watched it.
I mean, it's batshit crazy. It's
wanted to watch it, but I just haven't got around to it.
It's 50-50, but the whole point of it is, like, there's these seven just wild interpretations of what The Shining's about.
Right.
You know, one guy says it's all about the genocide of Native Americans. And another guy says it's Stanley Kubrick's confession that he faked the moon landing. And another guy is that it's about the Holocaust.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, some of them are very longbow interpretations.
Right.
But a lot of them, it's like, no, you could, you know, if you just had that little filter in your head while you were watching it, you would get something new out of it. Yeah. You couldn't not. Like,
now, with this, that filter is, he's definitely cheating.
He's definitely cheating.
Oh, my God.
The way he hovers over her when she's checking his phone.
Yeah.
That's the act of a guilty conscience. I mean, but again, you know, maybe he was looking at porn and he doesn't want to see that.
Right.
But who knows?
But the suggestion's there.
The suggestion's there. And the thing with this movie is, as I said before, there's never a scene that counteracts that interpretation of his behavior. There's not one shot in the movie other than when they get married right at the beginning where I'm ever like, oh, he fucking loves her. They love each other. It reminds me of the last month of dead relationships that I've had.
Yeah. Yep.
Where someone's just waiting for the other one to fucking put a bullet in it.
Yeah. Are you going to do it? Like, I don't want to be the one who's then guilty for doing it, even though we both want it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's such a good guy.
Mm.
You know, if she tried to break up with him, what are you doing? What? He's such a good guy.
Yeah.
And he is not.
He's up to something.
Or it's a terrible performance. But, you know, it's like, okay, so this will be a nice later segue, but it's a little bit, if you apply this logic to it, the performances are like Coppola's version of a David Lynch movie.
Yeah.
It's like her Blue Velvet.
Yeah. What you mean?
Do you know what I mean? You know, the staccato, you know, the language is not quite right. It's like, you know, borderline AI.
Yeah.
You know, someone who has trouble reading.
Totally. There's a few directors that do it, and it's, I mean, I don't know how you pulled it off with it and it's still being so powerful, but Kubrick does it. I mean, that's one of the big through lines in his movies, that kind of weird dead-eyed delivery of just crazy lines. Lynch does it. Paul Thomas Anderson does it, especially in the later films.
Yeah.
The Master and stuff. This weird detachment that I don't even know how to put that into words, but it's very unsettling, right?
Yes.
This movie did remind me of a PTA movie and a little bit of Kubrick stuff as well.
Yeah, right. This is great. Like, I'm just looking at all this stuff and it's like, do you feel like part of this was Jenny Slate's character is underutilized. I think she's funny, you know, she's funny, but I don't know. I kind of wanted a moment like in Somewhere when the dad and daughter hang out with the guy who plays guitar and sings at the restaurant. I wanted something like that.
Yeah.
But you can't have that in this movie because in Somewhere, even though he is a fuck up, he loves his daughter. Yeah. He loves her.
Yeah.
And he loves her in his way. And she kind of brings him around a little bit. just a little bit, and there's a real progress. But if this is a horrific, awful, dark comedy about a woman who just gives up, fuck me. It might be one of her best movies.
Yeah, maybe we should rewatch it.
Jesus Christ.
I landed on all this stuff last night. To be honest, I was kind of searching for something to talk about. So maybe I'm just talking out of my asshole, but you never know.
No, but no. But it's not like you've said this to me and I've gone, oh, I just don't relate to any of that. My thing was, I got to the end and I made myself laugh by just going, he's definitely cheating. And then just kind of went, oh, yeah, oh, Ben will hate this. Like, that's how I went thought process. I didn't even bother to explore that. I'm glad we had
a good chat about it. So I thought it would be a very kind of, whatever.
No. So when you brought it up, it was like, holy shit, I did think that. I just didn't follow through with what that meant for the rest of the film.
It's rough.
Wow. Jesus shit. This is fantastic. This has been the highlight of lockdown.
Oh, jeez.
Well, like, it has been grim.
Yeah.
Anyway, my next thing was, one of the things that does represent for me is I'm generally terrified by being friends with people because of your kids. That was off the back of the Jenny Slate stuff. Like, you know, you have to be friends with them because your kids like each other, but you're sitting opposite them going, like, this guy is a fucking arsehole.
Yeah.
And she is awful, and we're spending time with them, Sarah, when, you know, just because Juzzy Jr. and that fucking monster are friends. Jesus.
Another great reason not to have kids. Hard enough to spend time with the people you want to spend time with.
Oh, yeah.
Let alone other fucking mums and dads.
Oh, nah. No. Or, you know, like, even if you hang out with the good ones, you know what it means is that, by the way, you can't. Like, you have to pick up the microphone.
Oh, sorry. I got too relaxed. I forgot we were doing a podcast.
For everyone listening, Ben just decided, nah, I'm putting both my hands in my pockets and I'm going to juggle it on my chest in some weird-ass Neanderthal sexual act. Anyway, I can't remember what I was saying. Oh, yeah, being friends with other people's kids. Anyway, that is terrifying. Like, that is... like a genuine... Oh, that's what I was going to say. Then you find the friends that you like and you hang out. And so all the kids are hanging out and they're friends and you're friends with them. But there's still some point where you collectively all hate some other fucking family.
Of course.
Or, you know, then you're bonded over some weird tribal anger towards a kid's basketball club or something. I'd much rather keep all of that headspace to overthink this movie into brilliance.
There you go. Yeah. we're too petulant, selfish, only children. So the idea of surrendering every weekend to kids' sports and family barbecues is just not. It's extra unappealing. Yeah, man.
You know, like I'm not against it, but if it meant that I would not have this moment, I would rather have this moment.
I forgo the birth of my child for this podcast about On the Rocks.
Yeah, because it's really turned me around. I honestly can't tell you. Like, what a glorious feeling in the chest to rise up from apathy into this phoenix of love.
Good.
Jesus Christ.
Great.
This is great. So I did like, things that I did like, when she finally snaps at him and that he doesn't say anything nice and just asks, when did you stop being fun?
Mm-hmm.
I loved the ending with the dad not changing. I loved the line about him being deaf to female voices, because it's funny because of the pitch, you know, and what it means as a metaphor.
Yeah.
But she's also deaf.
To who?
Her husband.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So there's extra added irony now.
Yeah.
You know, so when he's saying that and she thinks, oh, here we go.
Yeah, of course.
She's not really hearing what he's saying.
Yeah, isn't that the eternal battle of parent and child?
Oh, my God.
I hate the thing that you do that I do now because you put the wiring in.
Yeah. And the cinematography. I don't think you can... Did you notice it's got different types of hues? No, I wouldn't
not
know.
At all.
Anyway, no, but I thought the cinematography... No, I was joking. I was about to say I loved it and have you change it on me. No, I thought the cinematography was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It's a nice looking movie.
Yeah. So I'd also written saying that I like that it bucks trends and chooses different paths. And what I would have liked to have had more is catharsis. Whether great. This all feeds into even the questions for the movie that I thought I saw.
Yeah.
Still represent where we are now.
Yeah. And also, I still think it's in line with all of her other work. There's very little catharsis in any of her work.
Yeah, so true.
There really isn't. Like, you know, you can say, oh, there's this great moment at the end of Lost in Translation. What a cathartic moment. Not really.
No.
Like, it's
going back to the life that he doesn't really give a shit about.
Yeah.
She's going to go home to the boyfriend who'd rather hang out with vacuous actors.
Totally. And but like all of them, you know, the dad in some ways probably just going to keep, you know, he might be a slightly better version, but he's not going to become a new person.
Well, he's got to catch a lift as well. He's left his car behind.
Yeah. The beguiled, you know, there's a culmination.
Yeah.
But there's no catharsis.
Like, oh, no, they go back to how they were before.
Well, the final shot is them literally behind the barred gates looking like they're in prison. It's the final shot of the fucking movie. All of her works are these, you know, like, well, here we are, like, you know, back kind of where we started, and we had, there were some events that happened along the way, but,
yeah,
you know.
So, I'd written the question for us, which was, did this movie maybe not appeal as much as we, you know, because we're not raised by men, so therefore, we're a little bit like...
Oh, fuck off, Dad.
Yeah. Thanks for the sperm.
Yeah. You can't charm my animosity towards you away.
Yeah. So, but now it's, I think that's probably still true in a certain extent. Like, we don't quite see the charm in his character. But once again, it's like, for me, it was like, oh, they're sort of implying this guy's really charming. And I just feel like, you know, he's like, he is, but he's not as charming as the... wife thinks, and it's like, oh yeah, because the husband is like a much worse version of him.
Yeah, and cold.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like as...
Like, he still calls her kiddo. That's a, you know...
Like, there's a lot of warmth to him.
Yeah.
And even the way he is with the kids. Like, it is very much that kind of, like, part-time grandpa, arm's length shit.
Yeah. But well, she said in... this is in one of the squid bits, so remind me if I try to read it out again. But the moment of coming home and the kids are watching Breaking Bad, like, that's... what happened when she came home and Frances was with her 5-year-old or something.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Frances is a fucking maniac, man.
Yeah, it's a good TV show.
Yeah, that guy's a fucking psychopath.
You know what a 5-year-old doesn't need to see? Any part of Breaking Bad.
Totally.
I wouldn't even let him watch the opening credits with the nice green and the little haze.
And like, the haze of smoke.
I'd be so scared what that meant later on.
Yeah, I think that this is very much like, you know, again... with all of her, it's seeing this relationship through the eyes of a daughter.
Yeah.
You know, to her father, which is the exact opposite of our relationship with our parent.
Ours is a look into the existential void that is never quite understanding where you come from and what you're meant to be. And mum.
Yeah, and mum. In brackets. Good Lord. I love you, Mum.
One of the scenes that I really loved, and in this initial question, I was going to say, I wish we'd seen a little bit more of this, but no, not now. But I love that moment at the party where she has the conversation with the two young women who barely know how to talk to her.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like that is a pitch perfect scene.
Yeah, of course, because they know what her husband does at the karaoke bar.
Oh, my Lord.
You didn't pick up on that?
Well...
of course. They're sitting there going, oh, fuck, we saw your husband necking some assistant at the karaoke club last night, and suddenly we have to talk to you, and it's really awkward.
So I just kind of looked at them as being just from a completely different era where you can't, you know, you just...
Maybe, yeah.
But maybe it's both.
Maybe it's both.
Well, it is.
Shit. They looked, like, really awkward.
Yeah, but I just figured that was the... age difference, because, you know, Regina Jones has turned up in a, like, she looks good, but she's very understated, you know, everyone else is kind of glammed up. So I thought it was a bit more
of a,
you know, oh God, who is this woman? Your husband's good to work for. But now you're suggesting it's like, holy shit,
there
she's
she is.
Here.
Fuck.
You know, when he did thing with the Watson and the, you know,
maybe this is just reflective of me just projecting toxicity onto everyone all the time.
This is a lot of comedians, you know. Oh, he's a really nice guy. Yeah. Oh, you hate him. All right. I'll see what's going on.
Yeah.
Man, that is.
That's how
funny.
I read that scene.
Right. When did you decide on this theory of what the film was? Like, scene?
I remember the first time I watched it thinking that scene's definitely them.
Yeah.
They know something she doesn't know and they're scared that they're going to spill the beans.
I did not read it that way.
That's how I read it the first time. And then, I think the first there was that final scene. It's when she chucked her dad's watch.
Yeah,
And they really made a point of talking that the watch meant a lot to her,
right?
When she was and how good it looks on her. And I think Marlon Wayans even says the same thing that Bill Murray says. It looks really good on your wrist,
right?
Weird fucking line delivery as well. Looks really good on your wrist.
Well,
he's just bought her a fucking Tiffany's watch with a beautiful inscription, and he's not even like, wow, it looks beautiful, honey, I love you. It looks really nice on your wrist. What fucking robotic fucking love is this?
Wow. So one of the things that I found a little bit weird in the film, but now I think are strokes of genius. I'm being so honest in the crazy ass turnaround I'm having on this movie.
Yeah.
I found it really weird how he loved going into restaurants and everyone thinking that it's his partner.
Yeah.
You know, and then at one point he pretends to make out with her. So, and that's really funny now if she's just married a worse version of her dad.
Yeah, well, I mean, isn't that the fucking cliche, right? Everyone eventually get, you know, people marry their parents. Goodness. Or versions of.
Wow. I'm just, I feel like I need a little nap. Like, just, you know, rub my tummy, have a little think about it all. And then rewatch the shit out of this movie. I don't know when I'm going to release this. It might be another week or two. But if you have kept up with all of the podcasts, this is why the Leftovers episode that week is one late. Because I know I'm going to have to watch this movie as soon as we're done again and have a real think about all of this. So I wrote, I don't trust anyone who whistles too much. That still fits. Yeah, like, that's still fits. Fine. Like, what is it about whistling where as soon as someone whistles, you go,
That's obnoxious.
What are you up to?
Yeah.
There's something very...
What's imposing your will on people?
Yes.
I didn't ask to hear a fucking tune. What are you whistling for?
If I want a tune, I've got fucking AirPods, mate.
Yeah, like, it's as obnoxious as people playing tinny hip-hop out of a fucking phone speaker on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, mate.
Yeah, it's the analog version of that. Yeah. Fucking here comes Uncle Jim fucking whistling fucking Slim Dusty songs all day. Just have a chat, Jim. Just have a fucking chat. Have something to say, Jim. Anyway, so then the next question was all about the ways that they keep mistaking her for his girlfriend and that. The scene with where the cops...
Yeah.
So there were two things to that that kind of hit me. One was, I think I would have preferred it if he didn't know that guy's dad.
Yeah. No, I really like that scene.
Right.
I thought that was a great scene of, you know, have you ever been like bullshitted by someone and you know that you're being bullshitted by them, but you enjoy it?
Yeah.
You know,
it might be this podcast.
Yeah.
You might be bullshitting me now.
You.
Yeah. And then you get to the end, you go, nah, that's not in any of it. And you are so susceptible. I go, oh, fuck. I really haven't seen people for a while. So I'm prepared.
I thought that interaction was very lovely. And that was actually the one part of the movie that I laughed out loud.
Right.
And you know what? It wasn't even Bill Murray. It was the reaction. It was the guy's facial expressions changing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, his eyes were suddenly widening. Like, yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. Like, he is underrated in that scene.
It's great.
Because, you know, it's a bit of a Bill Murray thing to do. Like, you know, it's his moment. Do you know what I mean? To turn on the charm and be 100% Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But he can't give that performance unless that guy is just shifting very gradually with him and giving him the reactions. Yeah. Like, it's a real two-hander.
Oh, and there's a moment, like, because there's resistance, but there's a moment where it's like, oh, you, like, he's turned. Like, he's putty.
Yeah.
And it's a very subtle acting choice, but it's really good.
Yeah. Well, the bit that did kind of feel a bit weird was watching it after all the riots in America and going, oh, God, like, rich white guys really get away with a lot of shit, don't they? But then that, if we are looking at this as a fucking dark, awful, brutal, nasty comedy, like, it's like the flavor of it, it's like I've sat down and I've gone, I can't wait to eat this chocolate gelato, and I look down and it's an eggplant parmigiana. Like, that is how drastic this spin has been for me. So, see, this question gets a whole new spin on it as well. There is something interesting in the film where we have men of a certain age and period in life, and then you have the modern woman of today, and is it possible to reconcile these two generations that in a way that is satisfying for both sides? And it's like, well, she does. She dates a version of her dad.
Yeah.
That's how she reconciles it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. The one who's the same but just doesn't say all the shit that upsets her.
Yeah, right.
That's thinking it anyway.
It made me feel... there were kind of Woody Allen-esque moments, and I had a moment of going, it's nice to be able to enjoy those flourishes again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, through Sophia's work. Thank you, Sophia. I just felt like I got that little taste that I needed, and in a way that I can enjoy it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You have to scrub yourself clean after it's all done.
Yeah, yeah. So this question fucking gets blown out of the water as well.
Yeah.
It did make me think, I think I would have liked to have been an older father with a daughter of that age, I think.
No.
But not if I'm trying to teach her lessons that she's too fucking stupid to pick up on. And I'm like going, fuck, like, how do you want me to spell this out? He's an arsehole and he's cheating on you. Oh, no, I'll just be this kind of eccentric guy. That's how I was looking at it before. Yeah. Anyway, could this be a TV series?
No. Be too horrible.
Oh my lord.
Imagine this drawn out for 10 episodes. But dead relationship.
Watching it get worse and her coming up with more, like just telling herself more stories, and her dad keep coming in every 3 episodes going, fuck, what do I have to do here?
No, I think the hot shot, I even think the length of the movie being only 90 minutes is appropriate.
Yeah,
just a little, you know, I think lingering anything past that dinner, you know, because it still is open-ended.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we're talking about isn't definite.
No,
but,
no. We're talking about it as an interpretation.
But cutting it at that moment, you know, there's nothing saying it goes either way.
Yeah.
So you know, if you want to believe that they fucking fall in love again and have a second honeymoon, great.
Yeah.
But no. So I think it only works as a 90-minute hot shot.
All right. So I ranked my Copeland movies, now I've got to quickly fucking guess what? Take the one that was on the bottom and insert it somewhere else. I've got to make a hard decision here. All right. So, what do you want me to go from bottom to top?
The bottom to top.
All right. So now coming at the bottom, you'll be wrapped.
Right.
The Bling Ring.
Good.
By the can I just say I loved all of them.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't like the Bling Ring, but other than that, I absolutely adored all of these movies.
Yeah. So this is just raving about 7 types of chocolate and just going, hazelnut, the one with a bit of orange in it.
Yes.
Oh, peppermint. So the Bling Ring, then Lost in Translation.
Bold.
Then Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
I'm going to put On the Rocks here because I don't know. I've got to rewatch it now, so it feels like it's jumped up.
Well, that can just float, right?
It's floating.
Take it out of the mix.
Yep.
Just do your top 6.
Okay, The Bling Ring, Lost in Translation, Marie Antoinette, The Beguiled, The Virgin Suicides, and I fucking adored Somewhere.
Wait, what are your top 3? Somewhere,
The Virgin Suicides, and The Beguiled.
I think that's my top 3.
Ah.
Because I'm not going to do a ranking list, but I think my top 3 are definitely Beguiled, Somewhere, and Virgin Suicides.
Yeah.
Yeah. great movies.
Oh, all fantastic. Yeah. Like, this has been a... Like, I've been wrapped with
no,
this.
No, I'm very glad you suggested this one, because other than Beguiled, I'd not seen any of her films.
Yeah, right.
So
fun.
I'm so grateful to have marinated in her oeuvre
for
a little while.
And isn't it great to just go from... You know, I'd like the movies that I'd seen of hers, but now I would... If someone asked, like I'm a proper fan, you know.
Well, you've watched her entire body of work. You know what her statement on life is up until this point.
And now this one. It's like, Sophia, oh, my God. You know, it's always funny when you have that moment. I don't get this often, but when you have that moment where you're like, oh, if I could have 10 minutes with her to just say, hey, you don't even have to nod. But here's my friend's theory, and we've applied it to your movie, and just look over my right shoulder if we are somewhere in the ballpark. I don't even really want you to confirm it 100%, but just a little taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like one of your movies, confirm it the way you do you shoot your movies.
Just into the middle distance.
Yeah, and we'll read into it what we want. This is great. All right, so I'll race through these squid bits. Not that many for this film. It's probably still, you know, only came out last year in this weird world, so there's not as much stuff out there. But Coppola felt that once the movie was released, it suddenly felt like a period piece because New York was in lockdown.
Mm.
It did make me want to travel. I haven't really cared about the idea of traveling, almost like, well, you can't, so why think about it? But watching this is like, oh, it'd be kind of nice to wander down a street and, you know, have a drink in a bar and see some stuff, you know.
Yeah, not flinch every time someone coughs.
Oh, my Lord, that'd be nice to sneeze. Jesus Christ, a sneeze is like, I'm reenacting those 1953 fucking nuclear bomb adverts. I'd duck and roll, wrap myself in alfoil.
Sneezing in public's the equivalent now of yelling fire in a crowded movie theater.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I have actually thought, I might go and rob a bank, or what I'll do is I'll walk in with two pepper cans and say, if you don't give me all your money, I'm going to shake these shit up and I am going to sneeze. The premiere of this film was at a drive-in, and Rashida had never been to one before. That's pretty cute. The story was inspired by a friend of Coppola's whose husband was traveling a lot with a co-worker, so she and the dad did go and spy on the husband together.
Did she say how that panned out?
Doesn't say.
Damn.
Right.
Right.
Maybe there's a reason.
Yeah.
She doesn't say how that panned out.
Yeah.
Because he cheated on her.
Yeah. And then everyone knows how great this movie is, and it's just going to be all of us, everyone listening, Ben and me, just let's keep it to ourselves. Let's not tell anyone. Let it be our thing. And then just now and again, you're like, once every 2 years, you're allowed to drop your information at a party. Hey, let's watch this film. And when everyone turns around and says, you know, it was okay, well, check this shit out. Boom. That's our gang. We're the On the Rocks gang.
Whoa.
Let's get jackets.
Yeah, and tattoos.
Coppola is a fan of the Thin Man movies, of which there are six known. I think the actors in it maybe did like 14 films, but six of them are known as the Thin Man movies, and they are based on a Dashiell Hammett story and follow the characters Nick and Nora, who are... You know, the stories are they're in a glamorous spot, they're having cocktails, when suddenly there's a murder and they're involved in a crime. And I hadn't heard of them. Well, I'd heard of them, but didn't really take any notice of them before. When I was reading about them, it got to a point that the formula to the movies was so etched in by, I think, movie four, like they're doing meta commentary on the plot.
Great.
You're almost like, oh no, this is happening again.
Like the fifth season of Seinfeld.
Coppola wanted this to be a buddy movie between a father and a daughter, and
it kind of is.
Well, he's a buddy trying to tell her that your husband's an ass. Coppola in one interview said, I was really trying to push myself out of my comfort zone to be a little bit more silly. I was in the mood to make a romantic comedy. I miss those movies that aren't challenging and are fun, but have enough substance so they're not just a total waste of time. I hope it's fun for people to see people having a nice time in New York restaurants. Are we reading too much into this?
Probably. Probably.
But But of course she's going to say that. She's not going to...
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, because it's like I enjoy it more thinking of it the way I think... Like, if I think of it as anything other than the way I think of it, it is just like a movie.
No, but whatever. If you think about it this way...
Yeah, I like it more.
It's a stunning work of art. Like, it is... The idea that this movie is so fucking nasty is great. Like, it just... all those bits that I thought that's a bit soft suddenly have these super sharp edges that I'm going to have to be really careful as I'm walking around them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just sometimes thinking of things a bit differently. Garfield is like the worst comic strip of all time, right? Like, it's awful. Have you ever seen Garfield minus Garfield?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's profound.
Yeah.
It's one of the deepest, most profound. For anyone that doesn't know, there's a thing called Garfield minus Garfield on the internet where they just remove Garfield.
Yeah.
And so it's just about John talking to himself.
Yeah.
And it's like a profound statement on depression, anxiety, ennui. It's beautiful, you know? And all it took was a little...
Like little
subtraction.
Yeah. Suddenly it's up there with Peanuts.
Yeah. Existentially profound.
Oh, my Lord. I don't mind sometimes when they just take away the thought balloons well. And it's just him talking and the cat not saying anything.
It's amazing.
The one without Garfield there is perfect. But if you're going to give me the one where Garfield's there but not thinking anything in response, that is... That still works for me as well.
Yeah.
She was scared to work with Bill again because of how much people love him in Lost in Translation. She got over this and used Bill because she'd never seen him as a father and because the character has so many conflicting qualities. I knew he could be unlikable, but Bill's heart would come through, which it does.
It does.
Because...
It does.
It did.
Yeah, it does.
It does because it did. That's the name of our second album for the Bubble Brothers after the 2021 tour. It is because it is. Sponsored by Finger Knuckle. And then the last thing was the... there was one more thing after the... came home and Francis Ford Coppola was watching Breaking Bad with her daughter when she was 5. Like, what are you doing, right. You insane arsehole? She also used to have moments when she'd be hung up on a guy and have martinis with her father who would give her the guy perspective. This is almost like... This is her... Like, this is almost her saying as well, I'm fucking on to you.
To her dad?
To men in general.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's a statement. Oh, man, this is a... Wow.
Well, Coppola, as I say, Coppola being your, imprint for manhood and masculinity, you'd have to work through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
He's like... I don't know if you ever watched... he's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, especially in that period in the 70s and, early 80s when he was, King Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, the stories are fucked up.
Yeah.
And just what a petulant fucking baby he is and like on and on and on. Like, I think he's probably mellowed with age, but, watch Hearts of Darkness or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just and it's like Apocalypse Now, Godfather 1 and 2, three of the greatest films ever made.
Right.
But, he'd be a difficult guy to be, around, let alone raised by.
Oh, yeah. Being raised by Francis Ford Coppola would be like living from 2001 to 2021. Nothing fucking stops.
Yeah, never nonstop.
Every time you turn around, there's some fucking other disaster.
Yeah.
And that would be him.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
Oh, but like the last 20 years, had some good times within it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to break up with the last 20 years.
Yeah.
As she is not going to break up with her father.
Totally.
Despite all those flaws. Wow. That has to be this, like, I honestly can't remember being spun around on a film. But at least it wasn't like from... Like, I liked it, to be like I feel like you've taken Garfield out of Garfield for me.
Great. Good. Fantastic. I was worried that this conversation would be dull and uninteresting.
Oh, no.
Before I saw the movie.
Right.
I was like, this is just going to be a paint-by-numbers, wacky, situational comedy.
I'm so glad... Even if I didn't follow it through, I'm so glad I just had that moment of making myself laugh and going, he's cheating. Because that gave me, because I had that thought, as soon as you brought it up, I was like, I didn't apply it to the whole film. And now the film is possibly like, like, dark comedians should watch it and go, oh, right, that's how you can do it without being dark.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
This is a dark film.
Yeah. You know what it is? I think that's because also I've been watching a lot of 50s movies at the moment.
Right.
Where there is some, especially Billy Wilder, holy fuck. It is, you know, some of the darkest movies I've ever seen. But because of the restrictions of the time, it can't be...
Yeah,
completely overt. It's got to be kind of simmering under the surface. And the more I think about it, I actually think that is more subversive.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of the times a lot more unsettling.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, it's the quiet desperation of being alive rather than, you know, flailing around. It's just this simmering under the surface, which is a great seg into talking about our next director.
Mate, I cannot tell you how I was sitting here thinking, as soon as Ben stops talking, this is a perfect segue into what you just said, which it is.
Yeah.
It's a perfect segue. Yeah. And as soon as we started, like, that little thing that you were saying made our conversation from last night pop more. So Ben and I had... We'd already picked our next director, and we won't say who it is because it'll happen at some other point. But it was all locked in, and we were, you know, there was a bit of trepidation because, you know, we'd really enjoyed the Sofia Coppola movies, and we just thought this one was going to be a bit fine.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had our next director locked in, and then you gave me a call last night, and you were like, I don't think it should be this director for these reasons. And I was like, oh, okay, I feel like they're pretty good reasons. Who are you suggesting? And then as soon as you suggested this person, I thought, well, I feel a bit weird. The world feels like it's closing in. It feels like there's no future. My dreams are really bizarre. I have weird moments of anxiety. I can't stop eating, even though I hate the way my body shape is going. Geez, I really should shave my beard, but it just seems like too much effort. And so essentially what I'm trying to tell you is we're doing David Lynch.
Yay! I'm really excited to do Lynch. I think it's the perfect time. I think, as we said on the phone yesterday, when things are weird, I tend to not put on stuff that counteracts it, like a happy, fun things, because to me that's like, you know, Singing in the Rain in A Clockwork Orange. All it does is augment the horror. And so I like to try and like lean into the weirdness. And I've been wanting to rewatch a lot of Lynch for the last couple of years, and it hasn't seemed like the right time. But I think lockdown 2021, it's fucking time.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do David Lynch.
Yep.
We'll tell you more about that when we get started, because we've got to work out, you know, anyway, there'll be more to this.
Yes.
But we are fucking pumped. And what a wonderful segue, because I just thought it was going to be a bit of a clean break, you know? But now it's like, if that spin on The Rocks is unbelievable, and it does suddenly feel like, oh, these people might go out to the suburbs and meet Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern now that they're grown up, you know, that kind of...
Yeah.
And they'd have this really, oh, yeah, isn't it great to be in a relationship kind of conversation?
Yeah.
He's cheating on her, and Kyle MacLachlan's character hasn't gotten over watching Dennis Hopper breathing in gas.
Don't you fucking look at me!
Don't you look at me! Well, that was great. Ben, that is not only good to see you, but
great
thank
to see you
for bringing this perspective.
Definitely.
It is so exciting. I genuinely am in a much better mood thinking, I have to go back and rewatch this. I have to rewatch this movie and just sit there and go, oh, you know what I'm not going to stop is my fucking eating too much,
because I'm
going to have to chew my way through this film because it's going to be so much more intense. I might put in my sleep apnea device and just grind and breathe at the same time. Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
Before we go, I told you that I rewatched the movie immediately after we recorded the podcast, and I watched it with the idea that the husband is definitely cheating. And look, I don't know if it was intended, but once you apply it to the movie, it fits perfectly. And I could not stop laughing in a very ghoulish way, because I went from just being a bit, it's a well-made movie, I don't really get it, I'm not really that into it, blah, blah, blah. Bit of a bummer to finish on. I've loved all the other films, and this one just feels a bit, And now I look at it like I'm watching Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut. Like, not that the films have that much in common story-wise, etc., but there's just this cold humour bubbling under the surface about people who have these seemingly perfect lives and how easy it is for them to slip through the path when certain truths are confronted. The coldness in the movie between the leads is now one of the funniest parts of the film, and the ending is fucking bleak, but it's also delicious. You know, I'd love to know what you think, whether you've already seen the film with that in mind, or if you haven't, maybe you've just seen the film and you've never thought about that before. Whichever. I don't know. If you watched it and didn't think that and you have a spare 90 minutes, it's only a 90-minute film, and you watch it again, let me know, because it flipped the whole experience for me. I've now watched this film 3 times and had a totally different emotional response each experience. You know, the first one was a bit, the second one was, well, it was well made, but I don't quite get the gist of why this even exists within her oeuvre too. Oh my God, this is amazing. Anyway, what a fun one, right? If you're enjoying the work my friends and I are doing here, please leave us a top rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. One more, as I said, to go for this season, coming out later in the week, and it is the finale of my favourite TV show of all time, The Leftovers. How many times can I tell you that I wept all the way through it? Well, 4 on this podcast, I think. 3 maybe? Maybe 4. Let's finish today's podcast with a quote from the director herself, Sofia Coppola. I've chosen this quote because, not only out of respect, because we've just watched all of her films, and I have loved all of her films, but it also feels like this quote kind of supports our new theory about the husband in On the Rocks. Sofia Coppola said, "It's always more intriguing to imagine what's happening as opposed to seeing everything, because then you can use your imagination. I always wanted to be at a distance." See what I mean? That quote feels like she's patting Ben and I on the back and saying, yeah, he did it. He's a dirty cheater. That guy. Until then.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.